With our shir where we study Pirkei Avos and our Divrei Torah this morning should be a zchus for the very dangerous situation that is going on in Eretz Yisrael. And we hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chesed uverachamim will make sure that all our brothers and sisters in Eretz Yisrael will be safe. So let us continue where we started last week. We learned the first phrase of a Mishnah, Shmaya Omer. Maybe someone can sit next to another person who might have. Shmaya Omer. We started last week with the Mishnah about Shmaya. Shmaya, we said, was the Nasi. His best friend was Avtalion, who was the Av Bezdin. They were the two leaders of the generation. And what we spoke about last week was Ehov Es HaMelacha. Shmaya says one should love their involvement in Melacha, their engagement in work, in busy work. And then the next phrase is something that is a little bit troubling. Usno Es HaRabbanus. You should hate the rabbinate. It doesn't say hate the rabbi. It says you should hate the rabbinate. What exactly does that mean? And especially when we talk about Pirkei Avos, we assume that Pirkei Avos is not limited to one group of people. So why would the Mishnah here tell us something that is only relevant to somebody who's in the rabbinate? Usnoas harabanus. And I believe it's quite clear that this really applies to every aspect of life. It has nothing to do with the actual rabbanut, with the rabbinate. But rather, it is anybody who is in a position of authority, and that means all of us in a certain way. Every parent is in a position of authority over their children. Every grandparent has authority over their grandchildren. In a certain way. Every older sibling is in a position of authority over those who are younger. Every employer is in a position of authority for their employees. And I was thinking about it. Even if you are an employee and you do not own the company, you do not run the company, you are in some way in a position of authority over the custodian who works, over the one who carries the mail. Everybody in some way is considered an authoritative figure in some way in your life. And the Mishnah here writes that we all have a choice and a decision to make when we go about life and what kind of perspective we are going to have. You can be that commanding and imposing and authoritative figure who always wants that they should have a forceful opinion on others and that others should recognize their position. On the other hand, we can go about life being easygoing and forgiving and gentle and tolerant and soft people, even in the position of authority that we may have. And it's a struggle for people. And you often see that parents sometimes love the fact that they are the authoritative figure over their children, and they relish in the opportunity to make their children recognize who they are as parents. Not saying right or wrong, but the Mishnah says it seems to be wrong. Usnoas harabanos. That's not the right way to live life. It is not the right attitude. And that's what I'd like to focus on this morning. There are some people who live an entire life in a constant pursuit of recognition, constant pursuit of respect and honor, that other people should understand what they are and what they are not. And the Mesilas Yesharim, written by Rav Moshe Chaim Litzato in the 1700s, what always amazes me about the Ramchal, he's one of the greatest Jewish philosophers, and he only lived 40 years. He was born in 1707 and passed away in 1746. And look what he accomplished. Which Jewish library in the world doesn't have his books and doesn't learn from them on a constant and consistent basis? The Mesilas Yesharim was one of his most important works, and there he has a lengthy discussion about this very issue, which I think is worth our consideration. Writes the Mesilas Yesharim, let's learn it together here. Number Aleph. Yisera alea chemdas hakavod. Ki kvar haya efshar sheyichbo sha'adam es yitzro. Al hamamon v'al shar hahanos. Every human being has certain things that they desire. Some people want a lot of money. And some people will go to great lengths to have that money. And they will do crazy things to have money. Either they'll get jobs that don't allow them to ever focus on anything else in life, all because they want money. Or they'll steal money from other people and they'll do things that are illegal in the hope that they won't get caught. But everybody has their desires. Everybody has something that they really want in life. And writes the Mesilas Yesharim, Efshar sheyichbo sha'adam. We are able to subdue, we are able to overcome, we are able to prevail over those desires that we have if we work hard enough. However, he says, Ach hakavod hu hadochek. that desire that man has for recognition, for respect, for honor, that is almost impossible. Ki e efshalo lisbol viliros es atzmo pachos mechaveru. It is so difficult for a person to see that somebody else is better than they are in any way. And says the Mesilas Yesharim, because of this impossible desire that humanity has, that other people should always recognize who I am and what I am, and give me the proper respect and the proper dignity, because of that, says the Mesilas Yesharim, we have watched so many lives get completely destroyed, and so many lives that have been devastated as a result. And he's going to go through a few examples. Before we get to the next paragraph, let me just give you the background about Yeravam ben Nevat. Who was Yeravam ben Nevat? Yeravam ben Nevat lives in the days of Shlomo HaMelech, and this is described in Sefer Melachim. I didn't put any of this on here. If you want to take notes, you can write it down. In Sefer Melachim, the Navi talks about Yeravam ben Nevat. Now, what happened? David HaMelech was the king who wanted to build a Beis HaMikdash. He was unable to. God says, you are not allowed to build a Beis HaMikdash. Dam l'rov shafachta, you were involved in too many wars, you killed too many people. Even though it was justified that David HaMelech did it, he did it on behalf of the Jewish community, for their safety. But God says, yideichem damim aleihu, I don't want the hands that are filled with blood to be involved in building my Beis HaMikdash. However, he allowed Shlomo HaMelech, the son, to be the one to go ahead with the plan. And that's what happens. Shlomo HaMelech builds the Beis HaMikdash. He has a very successful monarchy, everything's going very well, and he puts a tax upon the entire Jewish community all over the land of Israel. Now, Shlomo HaMelech himself wasn't going to go around collecting his tax, so he had certain ministers that were appointed in each community that they should be the ones in charge of collecting whatever money needed to come in to his kingdom. So he puts Yeravam ben Nevat in charge of one of the wealthiest communities, which was Ephraim uMenasseh. The Shevet Yosef, the two children of Yosef, very prosperous, they were doing very well, tons of people living in those communities. And Yeravam ben Nevat had this very prestigious job in the government, that he was the one who was the tax collector from Ephraim uMenasseh, and he would bring the money back to Shlomo HaMelech. At a certain point, Yeravam ben Nevat realizes that he's charging so much money to our Shvatim, to Ephraim uMenasseh, and it's unfair. And why is Shlomo HaMelech taking such great advantage of these two Shvatim? And he gets involved in a coup. And he gets involved and says, I'm going to get together with some other people in the government and we're going to overthrow Shlomo HaMelech. We're going to change the policy. We're not happy with the way that he's taking advantage of certain communities. So this is described in great detail. Shlomo HaMelech finds out what's going on and he realizes, Yeravam realizes, that his life is in jeopardy. The king has the right to kill me. If I'm morid b'malchus, if I try to overthrow the government, if I try to overthrow the king, he has every right to defend himself and get rid of me. So he runs away to Egypt. He runs away to Mitzrayim, assuming that there he's going to be safe. He spends some time there in Egypt, and after a little while goes by, he finds out that Shlomo HaMelech has died. And now I guess it's safe to come back to Israel once again. So he says now he's going to come back. Rechavam is the son of Shlomo HaMelech, who was supposed to be the one to take over. Achia HaShiloni is a Navi who lives at the time. Hope everybody's following this. But Achia HaShiloni is a Navi who tells Yeravam ben Nevat, you have nothing to worry about. We're going to have you come back to the land of Israel. You are going to actually have sovereignty over a major portion of the land of Israel. You are going to be a king. We're now going to split the Malucha. It's not only going to be David HaMelech's family, there's going to be Malchus Yisrael, and there's going to be Malchus Yehuda. There's going to be two different kings. You're going to have 10 of the Shvatim. Shlomo HaMelech's family is going to have 2 of the Shvatim. So you're going to be getting a very nice portion. And Rechavam is now the one, the son of Shlomo, who is supposed to be the king over 2 Shvatim. He's about to be anointed. Yeravam comes back and he starts negotiating with him. I think you should lower the taxes. He won't hear it. And now a great fight breaks out between the two of them. Yeravam ben Nevat says, look, even though I'm the king over a sizable portion of the Jewish community at the time, I'm concerned that if Shlomo HaMelech's children are going to be the ones in charge of the Beis HaMikdash, for anyone who's ever gone to Ir David, they show you where, don't worry, they show you where the castles, right, that they believe, the castles of David HaMelech were. Right outside of the old city. That's where the hub of Jewish life was. Here, you can come in. Plenty of seats up here. That's where the hub of Jewish life was at the time. So, his concern is, all the Jewish people have an obligation to do Aliyah LeRegel, to go up to the Beis HaMikdash 3 times a year. What's going to happen? All of my constituents are going to go to the community of Shlomo HaMelech. And you know what's going to happen then? They're going to start being convinced that really Shlomo HaMelech is the one we should be following. We should not be following Yeravam ben Nevat. So he's concerned. And what does he do? So the Navi tells us the following. Vayomer Yeravam Belibo. We don't have this on the sheet. I'm just going to read it outside for a minute. Then after this, you'll understand what the Mesilas Yesharim says. It's just the background to appreciate his words. Vayomer Yeravam Belibo. Again, Malachim Aleph, Perek Yud Beis. Yeravam says, in his own mind, he's having this conversation. Ata Toshuv HaMamlacha LeBeis David. You know, I'm concerned that the leadership is going to go back to the children of David HaMelech. Why? Im Yala Ha'am Azeh Laso Zvachim BeBeis Hashem BeYerushalayim. If the Jews from all over the land of Israel are going to go up to Yerushalayim to offer karbanos, Vishav Lev Ha'am Azeh El Adonayim. El Rechav HaMelech Yehuda. They're going to kill me. They're going to start following the children of Shlomo HaMelech. They're going to decide that that's the real way of life. That's the real king. And that's going to be the end of me. So he has an idea. Vayivatz HaMelech Vayash Shnei Egle HaZahav. Sound familiar? Great idea. You know what? We're going to make an Avodah Zarah. Not just one. We're going to make 2 of them. And we're going to situate them in very strategic places in the land of Israel. This way, we can convince everybody that there's no reason to go to Yerushalayim anymore. We don't need a Beis HaMikdash. Now mind you, Shlomo HaMelech just finished building the Beis HaMikdash. This was the dream for hundreds of years. And finally, there's this beautiful Beis HaMikdash. And Yeravam ben Nevat is concerned if everybody's going to see the majesty of Shlomo HaMelech's kingdom and the Beis HaMikdash that he is running. Can you imagine what it's going to mean for me? So he decides to go ahead and build 2 Egel Hazavs, the same way they did it in the Midbar. And he builds big houses of worship around these idols. And he convinces an entire Jewish community to start serving Avodah Zarah. And to neglect the Beis HaMikdash. No need to go to Yerushalayim. Nobody needs this anymore. Archaic way of life. Karbanos, whoever heard of that? So now they have these functioning Batei Avodah Zarah. As life goes on, this became a growing phenomenon that everybody took to. Everybody was excited about this idea, and nobody's frequenting Yerushalayim anymore. So much so that the Gemara says in Maseches Sanhedrin, beautiful statement, Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek l'olam haba. All Jews have a portion in the world to come. What we don't know is, except. The end of the Mishnah is, except for the following list of people, and one of those is Yeravam ben Nevat. He was such a horrible personality. He was chote umachti es harabim. He made an entire Jewish community serve Avodah Zarah. Says the Gemara, Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek l'olam haba. He is one of the exceptions. He has no portion in the world to come. But here's an amazing story, and it's such a tragedy, because the Gemara says Yeravam ben Nevat had Torah knowledge that was unparalleled in his generation. He was a brilliant mind. He had such charisma. He had so much to offer. And he blew it. But listen to the end of the story. The Gemara says the following. Achar hadavar hazeh, after, in quotes, this thing, after this happened, lo shav Yeravam lo. Yeravam ben Nevat did not come back. He did not do tshuva midarko hara from the terrible things that he had been involved with. So the Gemara wonders, what is hadavar hazeh? After this thing happened, what happened? Listen to the story. Amar Rababa Acher Shetavso HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeYeravam BeBigdo. God himself goes to Yeravam ben Nevat, grabs him by his lapels, very literally, and he shakes him up and he says, Yeravam, here's your chance to do tshuva. Listen to what he says. Chazar Becha. Yeravam, I'm giving you an opportunity. After all that you've destroyed in the world, after all that you've done, I'm giving you an opportunity to return, to repent, to do tshuva. Va'ani ve'ata uben Yishai netayel began Eden. And you know what will happen, God says? If you do tshuva, I will take a walk together with you, hand in hand, and Shlomo HaMelech, that's Ben Yishai, David and Shlomo, myself, you, and Shlomo will have a beautiful walk in Gan Eden. Here's your chance. So what happens? Listen to this. Amar Lo, he responds to God, I appreciate your visit. I thank you for your warm words. Mi Barosh. I'd like to know, when we take this walk in Gan Eden, who's going to be walking first? How's this going to work? Is it going to be me, or is it going to be him? Insanity. And the Gemara says that God responds to him, Ben Yishai Barosh. I understand that you're going to do tshuva, and we'll accept you again. But after all, I think David and Shlomo might be a little bit greater than you, so they're going to be in front. You're going to be right behind us. You're going to be holding God's hand. Ihachi Yeravim says, Lo ba'ina. Not interested. Walks away. What a tragedy. Says the Mesilas Yesharim. God comes, takes you by the lapels, shakes you up, talks to you very openly, tells you what your reward is going to be, and you're not willing to take it. Why? Not because you say it's too hard to do tshuva, not because you think the process is too difficult for you, but because somebody else is going to be better than I am. I don't want it. I don't want a part of it. Look back in the Mesilas Yesharim. Hine Yeravam ben Nevat, second paragraph. Anybody have a sheet that they can share with someone? Maybe we can pass one up here. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Perfect. Okay. You know, family. I gotta look out for family. Hine Yeravam ben Nevat lo nitrad mea olam haba ela ba'avur hakavod. Why did Yeravam ben Nevat destroy his opportunity to be in Olam Haba with God himself? Mipnei HaKavod. It was because he needed that recognition. Hu Masha Amri Zechrona Levracha. This is the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Kuf Beis. Tavso HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bebigdo V'Yamarlo. God grabbed him and he said, Chazor Bach V'Ani V'Atau Ben Yishai Netayel B'Gan Eden. Amarlo, he asked him, Mi Barosh, who's going to be walking first? Amar Lo, God says, Ben Yishai Barosh, it will be the three of us, but you won't be first. Amar Lo, Ihachi Lo Ba'ina. Writes the Mesilas Yesharim, how foolish people can be. Spend a whole life running after recognition, running after the honor that other people will shower upon you. Even if you spent your life, now you're about to die, you're at the end of your life. God says, wake up now before it's too late. Person still can't do it. Because it's so much of human nature is that we need that recognition from others. Writes the Mesilas Yesharim, next paragraph, Mi garam lekorach, sheyovad hu v'chol adaso imo. What caused Korach to destroy his life and all those who were with him? Ela mipnei hakavod. The Torah says explicitly, uvikashtem gam kihuna. And the Medrash writes there, higidu lanu, Chazal tell us, Kikolzen Nimshach Mipnei Shera'a Elitzafan Ben Uziel Nasi. He saw that there was somebody chosen as a Nasi. Vahaya Rotze Lios Hu Nasi Bimkomo. Korach said, I wanted to be the Nasi. Why did God choose him? It should have been me. I'm part of the royal family. How did he leave me out? And because of that, Korach goes on a path of destruction, ultimately destroying no one else but himself and his entire family and his legacy. Hu shagarm lefidas chachamenu zichrona levracha. You ever wonder, how did the Meraglim make this terrible mistake? Bechar lanu anashim, Moshe Rabbeinu was told you should choose the choicest of individuals to go and search out what's happening in Eretz Yisrael. So the Kli Yakar writes, Moshe Rabbeinu's biggest mistake was he chose men instead of women. Had it been women, the Kli Yakar writes, they never would have done such a horrible thing. Women have a tov ayin. Women think positively. And men are negative and sarcastic, and they're always looking, whatever. That's the Kli Yakar's pshat. Interesting that was the mistake. But anyway, says the Mesilas Yesharim, what were they thinking? These were great people. These were great individuals who were leaders of the Jewish community. Did they not know that Eretz Yisrael is what the Jewish people are supposed to be looking forward to? They didn't know that? So what happened? And Chazal say what happened was they were afraid. You know what? Our reality is going to change when we go to a established country, when we go to Eretz Yisrael and we're no longer in the wilderness, we're no longer in the desert, and perhaps our position in the community will be compromised. Maybe we won't be in charge anymore because we don't know how to run a country like that. We know how to lead a Jewish people when we're in the wilderness. Maybe we are going to be taken over by new leaders. So you know what? That's too painful. I'm going to do whatever I can to make sure that the reality doesn't change. And I think that's a very powerful statement because it's so true in our lives. We're afraid of what is going to happen if a circumstance may change. How is that going to affect my position? How is that going to affect the way other people look at me? And because of that, I'm willing to hold back something positive from happening just because I don't want somebody else having more. Such a tragedy. Amma hischol Shaul, larov el David. What is the story with Shaul and David HaMelech? So let me just read you a few psukim from Sefer Shmuel Aleph. I'm going to read it outside for a minute. Vayikhehu Shaul bayom ahu velo nasnu lashuv beis aviv. Shaul HaMelech loves David so much. Shaul HaMelech is the king. First Jewish king. And he loves David and he takes him and he asks him, please stay with me. I'd like to give you a position of honor and leadership in my cabinet. And therefore I don't allow you to go back home. You must stay with us. Vayichros Yonasan v'David bris ba'avaso oso kenafsho. David HaMelech is so beloved. Vayispos Yonasan as ha'me'il asher alav v'yunei l'David umada v'al charbo v'al kashto v'ad chagoro. David HaMelech is now handed all the keys. David HaMelech is made the general of the army. And everybody has such trust in him. Vayetze David b'chol asher yishalchenu Shaul yaskil. Every single mission that Shaul HaMelech sent David to do, David HaMelech was extremely successful. Vayisimehu Shaul al anshe hamelchama. He tells that David HaMelech should be the one to lead all the troops, to tell them exactly what to do, to be the commander in the army. Vayitai ve'enei kala'am ve'gam ve'enei avdei Shaul. Everybody was so happy with this appointment. So what happens? How did David and Shaul end up hating each other and willing to kill each other? What happened? So the psukim tell us. There was a war, and as the general of the army, David HaMelech goes out to fight the war, to lead the troops. David HaMelech comes back from this big battle that he won, that he fought, and he wipes out the Philistines, the Plishtim. Now he comes back to where Shaul HaMelech's palace was, and on the way back, all the women came out to greet the warriors, to celebrate this great victory. And they all come out, Lashir, V'hamecholos, they came out with their tambourines and with their songs and they're dancing and everybody's so excited. And what did they sing? V'ta'anena ha'nashim ha'mesachkos. What was it that they said at that time? The following. Hika Shaul ba'alafav, V'david b'rivavosav. Shaul HaMelech has wiped out thousands and David HaMelech has wiped out tens of thousands. Oh. Vayichar l'Shaul mi'od. Shaul is furious. How dare they give more credit to David HaMelech, who, by the way, is the general of the army. And it's not like they didn't give credit to Shaul. They did. All they said was, Shaul was hika ba'alafav. Shaul successfully wiped out a few thousand. V'David b'rivavosav. And David wiped out tens of thousands. Vayichar l'Shaul mi'od. Vayira be'enav hadavar hazeh. This infuriated him. Vayomer, and they said, Nasnu leDavid rivivos v'li nasnu ha'alafim. Really? You're going to praise David and say that he wiped out tens of thousands and I only did a little bit? Vayihi Shaul avein as David mehayom hahu v'hala. From that day on, Shaul hated David. A tremendous disdain for his closest friend. All because not a failed mission on David HaMelech's part, not that he was trying to undermine Shaul, all because the community, the Jewish community at the time, failed to recognize that Shaul HaMelech was the king and that he was ultimately responsible for this victory in battle, and they said that David HaMelech was a great warrior, more than Shaul, he hated him forevermore. And that relationship was over. Look at the next paragraph. Mi garam lo li Yoav. And this continues on and on in history. And these people weren't crazy. Shaul HaMelech, the Gemara says, was Bechir Hashem. He was the choicest prince of a man. But this is human nature. This is what happens. We all have a need for recognition. We all want other people to look at us and think of us in a certain way. And that's important to everybody. You can be Shaul HaMelech, who is the Bechir Hashem. I believe the Pasuk says in Tanakh, when it describes Shaul HaMelech, it says, Ben Shana Shaul B'malcho. Says, Shaul HaMelech was 1 year old when he took over the leadership. So, the Gemara says, really? 1 year old? How can he be the king? And the Gemara says, it doesn't mean. It means he was like a 1 year old who has never violated an Aveira, a pure, innocent child. Here you have an adult who's as innocent as a 1 year old child. That is Shaul HaMelech, and look what happens when his dignity is compromised. When somebody else is better than I am, it's destructive to the greatest of people. Writes the Mesilas Yesharim, Klalo Sheldavar, this is the underline, HaKavod hu adochek es lev ha'adam yoser mikol hatshukos v'hachemdos sheba olam. This is more destructive than any other desire that a person can have in the world. We can overcome certain things. You have a taiva, you have a desire to do something, you have a desire to eat something you shouldn't eat, you have a desire, all kinds of things. Every human being has their own challenges that they need to overcome. And with hard enough determination, we are able to overcome them. This is almost impossible. This is such a basic staple of human nature that we need to feel valued by others, that we need to feel recognized by other people who are around us. V'lulei zeh, writes the Mesilas Yesharim, if not for this, Kvar haya ha'adam misratza lechol masha yuchal. You would eat whatever you wanted if you weren't worried about how other people were going to look at you. Lilbosh mashi kasa ervaso. I wouldn't spend thousands of dollars on the clothing that I wear. Why? Why do I buy all of this? Does it keep me warmer? No. I buy it because I have to look a certain way, because I want people to look at me a certain way. I'm not saying you should walk around like a schlamazel. But the Mesilas Yesharim says there is a limit how far one is willing to go. Lishkon bebayis shetasti re'am min apagayim. What kind of house do I need, writes the Mesilas Yesharim? I need to live up to a certain standard of what other people expect of me. So what if the paint is blue and that wall is green and this one is yellow? Does it really matter? Yes, it matters. Why? Because other people are going to come into my house and think of me in a certain way. Does it really matter to me otherwise? No. If I lived on a desert island all by myself, wouldn't make a difference. It only matters because other people are going to see it. And what are they going to think? And what is their judgment and evaluation of me going to be? V'haisa parnasaso kala alav. Can you imagine how much easier life would be if we wouldn't have to make enough money to pay for all this crazy clothing and all these crazy houses and all these crazy vacations that we go on? Life would be so much easier. We wouldn't have to work so hard to make all that money to provide for all of that lifestyle. Writes in Mesilas Yesharim, but because I want that other people should see me in a certain way, I need to make myself nuts a whole life, making myself crazy, just to be able to sustain this lifestyle that is not even benefiting me. All it's doing is making other people look at me in a certain way. So in Sefer Vayikra, the opening words of the Torah are, Vayikra el Moshe vayidaber Elokim elav. God calls out to Moshe Rabbeinu, and as we know, the first word, Vayikra, is Vav, Yud, Kuf, Resh, Aleph. The Aleph is with a small Aleph. Aleph, Zeira. And Rashi there comments from Chazal, why is it small? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was Maktin Atzma. Moshe Rabbeinu always held himself as a simple person. And God says, you are Boreach min HaKavod, Kavod Boreach HaCharav. You run away from honor and dignity and fanfare. I, God, will go after you. I will chase the kavod after you. That's the person who deserves to be honored and to have great dignity. That's what the Gemara learns from Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a story about Reb Simcha Bunami Pshischa that a Yid once came to him and he said, I don't understand. Don't Chazal say somebody is Boreach min HaKavod? The kavod is Boreach HaCharav. I've been running away from it my whole life and I can't seem to find it catching up with me. I don't understand. So Reb Simcha Bunim said back to him, your problem is, every time you run away from the kavod, you look over your shoulder to see if it's catching up. And every time you look back, kavod thinks you don't want it near you, so it runs further away. So Rav Dessler writes an amazing insight. And it's so true what he says. I have young children, so to me I really appreciated this, but anyone who ever has dealt with young children knows exactly what he's talking about. Let's see. Rav Dessler writes in the Michta Melio, on the bottom of the page, number base. Hayelad mishtashaya b'tzatzuav. I'm always amazed how kids make something out of nothing. So we get a package from Amazon. You take out whatever it was that was inside, and all of a sudden that box becomes the greatest toy. An empty soda bottle, like, just is like the greatest simcha. I don't understand how. And it's because kids have this wild imagination. I can go in the box and I can be in a plane and I can be on a everything. They can make such a fantasy out of nothing. Says the Michta Melio. Teva Shvura, you have a broken box in your house. Somehow, Nasa Svina. It turns into a boat. And all of a sudden, the kid is fantasizing how I'm going on a trip and I'm going to this island and I'm going to that part of the world. And he says, Vuhu Atzmo HaKavarnit, I'm the captain of the ship, I'm the sailor. And they have all these imaginations in their mind of what's happening just from a broken box in my house. Ubishashu asik bazeh, hari hadimyon be'enav kimitzius. All this fantasy, he really believes is true. He believes it's happening. And we as adults sit there and laugh. How cute it is that a kid can live this innocent life and really believe that this is reality. Hamavugar, as we get older, kvar azav mischakim ka'ela. We don't play these kinds of silly imaginatory games anymore. Ach kama min adimyon yesh bameshu hu shoif a love. But we have our own fantasy and imagination. That is just as silly. Hare Adam rotza bekavod. Our fantasy is not the broken box in the house that makes us think that we're on a cruise, that we're going somewhere where we want to be. Not that I'm the sailor, not that I'm the pilot. We have a fantasy that we want people to think of us in a certain way, and we know it's not true. We know it's not the reality. You see couples who you know are going through a divorce, who you know are going through horrible court battles, and that they go in the streets holding hands with each other. It's sickening. All of that for what? I know what's going on in your life. What kind of facade are you trying to put on for everybody else? What is that? Says the Mesilas Yesharim. We want that people should look at us in a certain way, even though we know it's all a fantasy. It's an imagination. It's not true. Look at the next paragraph. What difference does it make how other people evaluate the kind of life that I live? What is a real, honorable, dignified person? That is personal self-worth and self-accomplishment. When I look at what it is that I do every day, when I look at what it is that I contribute to the world, that is kavod. That is a person who is a respectable human being. It has nothing to do with what other people may think or not think about me. If you are a fulfilled human being who has done things in life that are worthy of being recognized, what do you care if other people actually recognize it or not? Vim ayin, and if you're not, mahu marviachim heim toim sheyeshnobo. What do you gain if other people mistakenly think that you're different than who you actually are? Ein ze ela koach hadimyon. He says we are all these young children who live a life of imagination, who live a life of fantasy. We are all the same. We also live this fantasy. And we also have this imagination around us. And he goes on to say, there are some people who take this imagination a step further. And they're willing to pay for people to be able to recognize them. You ever go to a dinner? Sorry to bring up a very sore subject. Once in a while, an honoree at a dinner, you say, well, that makes sense. They really are worthy of being honored. Once in a while you go to a dinner, not here. Once in a while you go to a dinner and you say, really? Is this really who the community is highlighting? Does that really make sense to anybody? And what amazes me is you sit at that dinner and you watch this video about this person and you know that it's not true. And you, along with everybody else in the room, is laughing because you know it's not the reality. And somehow the honoree is not even embarrassed. And it amazes me every time. Am I wrong? Anyone who thinks I'm wrong, you can speak up. Don't feel uncomfortable. Again, this is not always the case. Some people are very worthy. Yes, when they honored you, it was 50 years too late. They should have honored you the last 50 years. Some people deserve kavod because of what they have done. And other people, you look at it, says Rav Dessler, and they're willing to pay for themselves to be looked at in a certain way by the community when we all know it's not true and we're all sitting there and laughing at them.
Well, to be fair.
Yes, be fair.
Sometimes they're doing a chesed to the...
Of course, I understand it. So someone said to me last night, what, we shouldn't have dinners anymore? Not a bad idea, actually. I think we would all be happier. But he says, some people, all they want is that someone else in the community should think of them in a certain way, should put them in a certain category where they're not. And he says, you know, I was always amazed. When I was in the White Shul, Mr. Zev Wolfson was already not well. Zev Wolfson, Rav Moshe Shapiro said about Zev Wolfson that he was the greatest Baal Chesed of our generation. Rav Moshe Shapiro is a great man. And Rav Moshe Shapiro said that Zev Wolfson was the Gadol Hador and Chesed of our generation. I heard that. He was a great man. For anyone who didn't know him, he was a great man. And he helped so many institutions before it was in style for people to help the way they do today. He was a real pioneer, a real amazing person. And it always amazed me how Zev Wolfson would come to shul, sit in the back. For anyone who davened in the White Shul, you know, he sat in the back, didn't expect anything for himself, never. Never. And I remember one of the family members telling me how upsetting it was that their father, who spent his entire life helping individuals, helping communities, helping build yeshivas and build schools and helping everybody in so many different ways, on so many different levels. I remember one of the family members telling me after he passed away how upsetting it was that while their father was involved in giving and being all these things, he would get calls from this one, from that one, asking him an eitzah on this, an eitzah on that, everything. And all of a sudden their father got sick and it was like he didn't exist. After all that he did for everybody. After all that he did for everybody. I was happy to hear that the family members did tell me one of the only people in the world that he helped who was always a person who treated him with dignity throughout his illness until the end was Rav Asher Weiss, which was consistent with everything I know about him. Zev Wolfson founded Rav Asher Weiss's kolo, paid for the first few years single-handedly, and he felt forever indebted to him. And every time he came to America, he went to his office, even after he was not well anymore, and he learned with him, even though he wasn't getting any money from him anymore. It had nothing to do with it. It was a real relationship. That's the way a mensch is supposed to act. It has nothing to do with how much money a person has. It has to do with whether or not you have a real relationship. How many people are there? There was somebody who came to my house, a very, very, very wealthy individual who gives a tremendous amount of tzedakah. And they were talking to me about how they live a whole life of paranoia and they think anytime anybody talks to them, they have something up their sleeve, something that they wanted. There's always an angle. And it was so sad to hear this. This person is so unhappy. And they said they can't have any friends. And it was terrible to hear this. And I'm listening to it. And I ultimately spoke with one of their family members. And I said, how can this be? It's just so foreign to me. It didn't make sense. And the family member said, imagine if that was you. And every institution in the world is calling you up and asking you an eitzah. You're not the smartest person in the world. But at a certain point, you start believing it. Because every single famous person in the world and every single institution is asking you for advice about everything when you are not qualified to give advice on any of it. And after a certain period of time, after years and years of this, you start going crazy. And says the Michtav Me'Eliyahu, sometimes we build around us an imaginatory life that we know is not real. And there are people around us who feed into that silliness. We are the same as children, he says, and we often are even worse than children. If you look at the end, on the other side of the page, he says, we have our adult games that we play. At the very end of this paragraph, he says, Hare Shagam Hamavugar, there are three dots at the very end. Hare Shagam Hamavugar Mishtal Sheya Batsatsuim. Adults also play with children's toys. And we also have this wild imagination and fantasy. In some way, we're worse than children. Why? Because when a children grows up, they start realizing, this is silly. This is not real. I'm not going to play in the box anymore and imagine that I'm doing something that I'm not. I'm not going to take the soda bottle and believe that I'm actually, that I just won the lottery. Doesn't work that way. And he says, adults, as we get older and older, we get more and more set into this imaginatory life that we've created around ourselves that we know is not real. And how sad is that? How sad is that, he says. It's all the need for recognition. That's what it comes from. And that's what he writes is our Mishnah is teaching us. Sinoas harabanus. Don't live a life where all you need is recognition from other people. That they recognize your authority, your dominance, your power. That is not the proper attitude. That is not what makes a person happy in life. How often have you read articles about people who are very wealthy, who have it all, who seem to have it all, and are so depressed, and are so unhappy? It's not a rule. It's not true. Not everybody. Some people know how to do it right, and some people don't. But it's so sad. You can have everything, and you realize you really have nothing, because you really don't have any self-worth. Your whole life is just about other people thinking that you are a certain way or you're living a certain way, and it's not representative of who you really are. Life is not about recognition. Life is about the self-worth, about my accomplishment, about what I do, about what I infuse to the world, how I contribute. And this is the way great Jewish leaders always needed to be. So I'll just give you one example. But this is the way it always has been and the way it always will continue to be. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah says, was anav mikol adam asher al panei ha'adamah. We have no understanding of what that means. But Rabbi Kiva Eger was one of the greatest gedolim who lived in the 1800s. A tremendous genius, a leader of his time. Every single yeshiva in the world studies his Torah to this very day. We live off of his tshuva svarim. Rabbi Kiva Eger was one of the greatest men to live in the last few hundred years. So the story is told that Rabbi Kiva Eger once was approached by a member of his community who asked him to please send a letter to a tailor in the neighboring town that he would like to be mazmin him to a din Torah. They had some kind of disagreement, and they wanted Rabbi Kiva Eger's Beis Din to adjudicate the case. So you have to send a letter to both parties. So he asked Rabbi Kiva Eger, can you please write a letter to this tailor in the other community that he should come on a certain date? We want to discuss the issue. Kiva Eger sits down, he writes a letter, he sends him. This tailor was illiterate. He didn't know how to read the letter. All he sees is it has Rabbi Kiva Eger's stamp on the outside, so he gets nervous. He goes to shul the next morning, shows the letter to everybody, and the whole shul bursts out laughing at him. So he said, what does it say? So everybody's laughing. And they read him the letter. The letter opens up with like two sentences of superlatives. Dear Harav Hagon, the genius, the well-known, the unbelievable person who everybody in the world turns to, Mr. Taylor. And then he writes the letter. So this man is infuriated. He goes immediately to Rabbi Kiva Eger's house. He says, what are you doing to me? You humiliate me like this? You're trying to play a joke on me? You send me a letter that says all these crazy things about me? You know they're not true. Kiva Eger turns to him very naively and he says, I'm not sure what surprises you. Every time I get a letter, that's what it says. I thought that's just the way people write to each other. That was Rabbi Kiva Eger. Didn't see what was strange about writing a letter like that to another person. And Rabbi Kiva Eger has a number of letters that he writes to his friends about how much he absolutely abhorred his position of leadership. How much he would have done anything in the world to get himself out of this. Let's see if you look on the side, on the second side here, number Gimel. He says, Ator derech limtso manoach, lifrok ol harabanas v'leishev ke'achad ha'hamonim. I wish I would give everything in the world to just be a regular person in the community again. I didn't ask for this. Ba'asher yadu alachem ki ma'asti baharbe. You know my friend, the one he's writing to. You know how much I have no interest in this position. Ata Hashem yadata, God, you know, melvad emas hora lechaser das kamoni. I'm petrified when somebody asks me a shayla. B'chal eis ki ilu gehenem psucha b'nitachtai. I feel like Gehenna is opened up underneath me every time somebody asks me a question. A perspective. It's not so easy. Uva emuna. You know, we all daven for certain things on Yom Ha'Noraim, things that are important to us, things that really matter. And everybody has their list of priorities, what they think is important and what they think matters. What did Rabbi Kiva Eger daven for on Yom Ha'Noraim? Ki rov tfilasi b'yamim hakdoshim. What did I daven for on the holy days of the year? Lahotzi mi mazger asir hazeh. Get me out of this position. That's what he davened for. I don't want to be the leader of the Jewish people. I understand that it was thrust upon me, but now I feel this is not for me. I don't appreciate the fact that I have to be that authoritative figure. I don't appreciate the fact that I need to be the one who is telling others how they should act and what they should do. Va'anochi l'matzasi margora l'nafshi klal. I don't see that my prayers are being answered. Go to the next paragraph. He has another letter to a friend where he says, May odai sannesi es harabanus v'hayisi boreach kimetacha v'yakeshes mila hisnasos al b'nei adam. I would run as far as I possibly could to get away from this reality. V'chol magamasi lazov es harabanus. My sole focus is, get me out of here. I don't want this. Umotzi ani marmi maves es inyan harabanus. This is worse than death, he says. Not because I don't like the people, but because I don't want to have this perspective on life. I don't want to be the one charged with leading the Jewish people. Tavati b'metzulas harabanas, I'm drowning. Asher li le'even nagef lugufi v'nishmasi. And then he writes, v'chal mi sheyoshev berabanas eved Hashem yikra. Do you think somebody who's in the rabbinate, somebody who's in a position of leadership, is called an eved Hashem? Now what does he mean? Of course he is. He spends his entire day taking care of God's people. Writes Rabbi Kiva Eger, Hare Rabim Chalalim Hipilu Harabanas Vahisnasus. We all know how much power corrupts. And says Rabbi Kiva Eger, look how dangerous it is for a person who doesn't understand what the proper perspective is when you are the leader. Look how dangerous that is. You call yourself an Eved Hashem, he writes. You're proud of the fact that you're the one who's the authoritative figure. There are some, he says, who know how to do it right. But for the most part, he says, it's an impossible task. So, in the very end of his life, Rabbi Kiva Eger's daughter married the Chasam Sofer. Chasam Sofer was also one of the greatest Gedolim. I believe Chasam Sofer was older than his father-in-law. It was a second marriage for him. So it was strange. He was older than his father-in-law. But the Chasam Sofer was in constant communication with Rabbi Kiva Eger throughout his life about all different issues. He knew Rabbi Kiva Eger was one of the Gedolei Ador. So now somebody suggested a shidduch, happened to be his Rebbe's daughter. So he sent a shaila to Rabbi Kiva Eger, just as he would send every other question in his life. So he sends the following letter. I've heard about this wonderful girl. She happens to be your daughter. I'm curious. What do you think? Look at this beautiful exchange of letters, and it just shows you this is the way great Jewish leaders ought to be, and not just leaders in the rabbinate, leaders in every capacity. Look at what they write. So Rabbi Kiva Eger responds the following. Where is this? Number, hey. Motze ani lechove lahar es kevot harasu. Let me respond to your question. Ki im amnam biti mehuleles betor isha yiras Hashem. My daughter is amazing. My daughter has tremendous yiras Shamayim. Great idea. Kula na v'chasida b'ma'aseha. You're going to love her. I think this is a great shidduch. However, he says, Aval halo kvo tarasa bevadei chashka nafsho hatahora lemalos acharei divrei chachamenu. I am sure you, as the great Chasam Sofer, I am sure that you want to follow the advice of Chazal. And what do Chazal say? They say that a person should do whatever he can to marry his daughter off. A person should do whatever they can to marry a bas Talmud Chacham. Lemadzrega zu shel Talmud Chacham, I don't think I'm worthy. So it's a great shidduch. I just feel bad for you that you're not going to be following the advice of Chazal of marrying the daughter of a Talmud Chacham. This is not fake humility. This is real. Look what the Chasam Sofer responds. Beautiful. The next paragraph. Dorav ben oger lemalas bito v'tzidkasa. What you told me about your beautiful daughter, ne'emanim alai kemeya edim ksherim v'ne'emanim. I trust you the same way I trust you for everything else. I trust you when you tell me about your daughter. V'imbito ibas talmud chacham. Whether or not your daughter is the daughter of a talmud chacham, he says, I take full responsibility. Don't worry about it. However, he says, Bram, I have an issue. Libi nokvi mitzad acher, lididi bar hadavar. He says, I am sure that you want to follow the dictum of Chazal, which is, somebody should do whatever they can to marry their daughter to a talmud chacham. And the problem is, he says, Alzani meitzer v'doeg mesupak mefukfak. I'm not sure if I'm really that person. Obviously, you want to follow what Chazal say, that you should marry your daughter off to a very prestigious Talmud Chacham, but he says, I don't know that I fit that description. This is the way great Jewish leaders talk to each other. This is the way it's supposed to be. And Reb Chaim Volozhiner writes in our Mishnah, Shemaya, let's remind ourselves, Shemaya says the following, Ehov es hamalacha usno es harabanas. What is the connection between those two things? Writes Reb Chaim Volozhiner so beautifully, in every position of leadership, and as we said, this goes for parents, it goes for grandparents, it goes for every single person who is in an authoritative position over somebody else. Writes Reb Chaim Volozhiner, there are two aspects to that position. There is the malacha part, and there is the rabbanus part. What does that mean? I'll just give an example from my own experience, from my life, but everybody can extrapolate in their own way. There are two parts to the rabbinate. You think it's glamorous, you think it's glitzy to have a couple sitting in your house till 2 o'clock in the morning having awful shalom bayis problems. You get no honor for that. No kavod, no money, no anything. That's the malacha. You think it's fun when an almana shows up and crying to you that nobody's inviting her over, that she's lonely in this community, that nobody cares about her, that nobody calls. You think that's fun? You think I get anything for that? Do you think when I run to do a Bikur Cholim and spend my entire day driving to the city, spending time with this family, getting yelled at by them, coming back home, there is nothing glamorous in that part of the job, but that is Ehov es Hamalacha. Get your hands dirty. Be involved and do something significant with your life. Love that part of the job. And although sometimes the job comes along with the kavod, with the rabbanus, sometimes you need to sit on that dais, and sometimes you are going to be called upon to be that figure. Sinoas harabanas, that's the second part of it. What you should love about what you do is, when you're involved, when you do the malacha, when you do the actual work and make a difference in people's lives, that is what it's all about, that's what life is all about. Usnoas harabanas, the rest of it, it's worthless, it's meaningless. We all know it. It's a facade. It's nothing. And that, writes Reb Chaim Volozhiner, comes from Shemaya. Shemaya was the leader of his generation. He was the Nasi. Shemaya tells us, you want to know how to make sure power will not corrupt you? That is the attitude you need to have. That is the perspective one needs to develop over life. Ehov es hamalacha. There's no glitz and glamour in changing your children's diapers and in serving them dinner every night and in all of those things. So yes, every once in a while, is it very exciting? Is it very beautiful that we get to go and have kavod because of our children? Yes. Ehov es hamalacha. Your job is to make a difference in people's lives, to be involved in the malacha part of life. And every once in a while when you have the rabbanus part, yes, it's nice, but that's not my tafkid. That's not what life is all about. That is the message of Shemaya v'Avtalion. And it's not only limited to somebody who's in the rabbinate, to somebody who's in an obvious position of leadership. It's something that is relevant to every human being, to every experience of life. Because all of us in some way are that person. All of us in some way have that choice that we are able to make. What kind of attitude, what kind of perspective will we have when we interact with others who look up to us for guidance? Will we be that figure who is so imposing, who is so forceful, who is so controlling, and who loves the fact that people are feeding in to their need for kavod, to that quest that they have for being recognized? Or are we the kind of people who are easygoing, who are forgiving, who are understanding, who are tolerant and gentle and soft? And think about how it is that we interact with others and how it is that they perceive us as being the kind and gentle, soft people that we are able to be. It's a choice that every human being is able to make. And the Mishnah here says, we all have the opportunity to make that determination and to do it right. And that is the only way, says the Mishnah, that one will save themselves from the corruption that sometimes power can lead a person to have. So, Amir Tzashem.